Welcome to Cloud Out Loud Podcast with your hosts, John Gallagher and Logan Gallagher. Join these two skeptical enthusiasts, or are they enthusiastic skeptics, as they talk to each other about the cloud out loud. These two gents are determined to stay focused on being lazy and cheap as they evaluate what's going on in the cloud, how it affects their projects and company cultures, and sometimes how it affects the world outside of computing infrastructure. Please remember that the opinions expressed here are solely those of the participants and not those of any cloud provider, software vendor, or any other entity. As with everything in the software industry, your mileage may vary.
Welcome back to the Cloud Out Loud podcast. I'm John Gallagher.
And I'm Logan Gallagher.
And it's been a heck of a time since the last time we talked. There's been all sorts of, so we're here in the U.S. We had a big midterm election, and the ramifications of that will be, there are definite technical ramifications of that. One, several people are trying to identify ways that they can control the technical industry. But specifically in the technical industry, we've had a heck of a week. What is this? This is November 11th. And this week, we've seen the ongoing meltdown, the ongoing problems of Twitter. We've seen just the inflammation, or just the what the heck happened to FTX.
Yep, implosion.
Yeah. And to our minds, as we were talking offline, this is a reflection of immaturity, and not the bad connotations of you're a child, but the lack of a mature process or a mature industry doing mature things. You know, you had the founder of FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, who famously said he doesn't read books. And there's whole Twitter threads now of books that he should have read about creating essentially Ponzi schemes and the madness of crowds. And just this is history that has happened over and over and over again. The immaturity in this sense of this is the first time it's ever happened. No, we're human beings. We are in a continuous cycle of doing this sort of thing. And if you put the time in, if you put the effort in to study, you would have found that out. And then the Elon thing, oh my God, go ahead and take it away on the Elon thing.
Well, it has been a bit, you know, they talk about the concept of seagull management, where a manager comes in, flies in, poops on all the ideas and flies away. I think Elon, we're going to have to find a better analogy for Elon than seagull. Because it's been every hour we've gotten a different version of Twitter, and it's had some major ramifications, I think, for their relationships with their advertisers, their users, their employees have just all kind of gone up in flames.
Yeah. I just as one example, the person who created the fake Eli Lilly account and announced that they were giving away insulin for free, there was a 5% hit on Eli Lilly's stock. And then cumulatively, it hit Novo Nordisk, it hit other pharmaceutical companies. Cumulatively, it was between $18 and $20 billion of market share that evaporated because of one single tweet.
And it only cost $8.
That's right. Oh my gosh. It $8 to evaporate $20 billion. And by the way, given a true valuation of Twitter, those three companies could have just pooled their resources and bought Twitter for less than $20 billion and shut it down.
Sure.
And that would have made more sense. So we have the FTX situation where someone's basically has no sense of history. We have Elon Musk, who has, to my mind, no sense, but is very much that Western caricature of a knight on a horse coming in to save things, which is an ongoing trope in Western civilization. We just have these levels of maturity, these kids' stories that get lived out in a business context. And it happens with every new industry. It happens with every new innovation that we've done. And we are, again, learning those lessons that history is real. The way people cope with things is a cycle of things that happen. And what we want to talk about today is how do we bring maturity to this process? Essentially, the cloud marketplace, cloud engineering is still in its infancy or childhood, and thus is subject to a lot of immaturity. And two things that we want to talk about here, or one major thing, is cost management. We've already done an episode on cost management, but it rears its ugly head every so often that people are paying too much money to be in the cloud. And we have examples of two commentaries on that. One is a blog post by DHH, founder, CTO of 37 Signals, creator of Basecamp, Hey.com, an innovator, but also someone who's been in the industry long enough that he kind of has grown to the point where it's kind of all you kids off my lawn.
I wouldn't call him a paragon of maturity, but I think when it comes down to his money, his bottom line, he is responsible.
Yes. Absolutely. So he put together a blog post where he said, we're leaving the cloud. And it was definitely meant to tweak cloud fanboys, of which we are too. And so there's a lot of ideological, I'm right-ism in the blog post, and you all are wrong. But here's from a couple of cloud fanboys. Respect for penciling out the numbers. Respect for understanding how his cash flow works in his business, how his customers get acquired, how they fund the operations. And based on his analysis, it makes more sense for him to pull out of the cloud, buy his own servers, and create the infrastructure. And the numbers and the business flow he's cited, it makes sense.
Yeah. So he characterizes his organization as a medium-sized company with stable growth, and they have used a variety of cloud services in Amazon and Google and on-premise. He says they've used virtual machines like EC2 and Compute Engine, as well as bare metal. It frankly sounds like they're relying a lot on using VMs. It's unclear, based on his blog piece, whether they're using more managed or serverless options like Lambda or Cloud Functions. But, you know, taking him at his word, they've penciled out that for the servers they want and they can predict they'll need to use in the next X amount of years, it makes more sense for them to run on-premise data center with those servers, and instead of relying on on-demand cloud VMs.
So, and if that's his cash flow, if that's the structure of his business, if he doesn't have a lot of churn with his customer base, and for the Hey.com product, which is an email service, once people sign up, you don't see a lot of churn because it's a pain to switch out your email. That makes sense. Now, there are things that architecturally, I would approach things differently, but we are not privy to their stack. So sure, that makes a lot of sense. But that carries us to the second blog post that we're going to talk about today. And that's from the Duckbill Group, one of the founders. So the Duckbill Group is Corey Quinn and Mike Julian created this as a AWS cost management company. We talk about Corey a lot. Corey is more the public face of Duckbill Group, but Mike Julian's kind of the background person doing deep analysis of cost control. And his blog post starts off with this line that is irrefutable. He said, when Corey Quinn and I first started the Duckbill Group in 2019, I was expecting we'd be advising organizations on complicated reserved instance purchases and the like. Everybody who takes a look at AWS thinks the same thing. You know, we're going to maximize our reserved instances. We're going to negotiate discounts. And he, and I think this is the case for us as well, quickly discovered that it's the architectural choices you make, that the invoicing is nibbling around the edges, and that what you really have to engage with from day one is the structure of the stack you're creating to optimize a cloud environment.
And crucially, that puts a lot of responsibility on the engineering department, that this is not just going to be the finance department figuring out how to get the best deal with their cloud vendor for this X amount of managed reserved instances that they anticipate using, that this is going to be on the engineering teams to figure out, for this service I'm building, for this app I'm building, or this product, how do I make sure that I'm picking the right technologies that are effective to deliver this app to its users, but also that is the most cost efficient.
What he really emphasizes is you have to understand the business flow. And this ties it back to DHH's blog post. Is DHH has this view of what is the structure of his business really is, what the data flow is, what the customer engagement truly is. And Mike in this one is talking about everybody has to understand that. What data are you collecting? What are you manipulating for your customers? How do your customers engage with that? How are you storing it? All of those are engineering questions, but they also drive your cost factors. And he has 5 points at the end of his memo, which I just want to read out. So the first one is rethink what you think you know about cloud spending. Operate from a new assumption. Architecture and costs are the same thing. Work to better understand how your architecture affects your costs and how your specific cost drivers behave. The majority of your effort should be on understanding cost drivers instead of software programming management and identifying idle resources. So it's understanding the product itself and working backwards. If people have done analysis of things like Toyota manufacturing and continuous improvement loops, you start to see that the stuff we were doing on processing lines, on creating cars, pulls into now into the cloud. And number three, build processes into your engineering release cycles for ongoing cost optimization efforts. It's not one and done. You can't just hit a home run and walk out of the ballpark. There's more innings to play. Staff your cloud finance efforts with engineering supported by finance, not the other way around. Your finance team is probably doing a great job on your cash flow, but not understanding what's driving your cost factors. And then finally, acknowledge your tools aren't the complete solution. Tools are not a replacement for people. Tools augment people. So these 5 points are such a different way of approaching the entire cloud effort. And we talk all the time about the cloud pulls more and more people in, that true cloud engineering efforts include security, include your database folks, that all of that factors into the cloud. But what he's arguing is you start bringing other aspects of the company in as well, like your finance teams. Now, that's the ideal, but we also have the reality of, hey, look, we are a software company and we want to grow and change and meet customers where they are. We're continuously going to be challenged to extend or create new software. How do we include that with cost management? And I think, as you were pointing out, there's other technologies, or we have to expand our capabilities with other technologies, right?
Yeah, there is a heuristic that I don't entirely remember where we originally got it. We might have to put that link in the show notes, that you should be targeting your cloud spend around your compute spend for EC2 specifically around 70% of your cloud spend. But really, if you're leveraging the full value of the cloud and all the potential of the cloud, you should be leveraging more of the managed services, more of the on-demand resources like Lambda functions in AWS, Cloud Functions in GCP, that you're only paying when you're using them. So when you invoke them with an HTTP request, when you invoke them with an event, when something else happens in your system, they start up, they run the code that you've uploaded into the cloud, and then they turn off, instead of paying for these always-on, always-running instances. So when you are continuously improving, you're realizing that you likely have major parts of your infrastructure that frankly don't need to be on and operating 24/7, 365. They only need to be responsive to incoming requests or incoming events that may happen every minute, every hour, maybe only once a week. And this is, again, crucial to understanding your business flow. If you understand when you're getting incoming traffic from your users, then you're better able to match that traffic to the best technology.
Absolutely. You know, you're not there to build machines. You are there to build solutions, and those solutions have to be available to your user when they need them and not cost you anything if the user's not needing them. So, and that goes all the way back through the stack. You know, the compute function, we can substitute cloud functions, cloud run, lambdas, but what's happening in the background of that? How's our data being stored? It's 3 a.m. and we're running a cluster of Elasticsearch or RDS servers. Why? Does the data model that our customer is engaging with truly need a relational service? Do we truly need that search service? Or can it be something that we access on an as-needed basis? It may be that on apples-to-apples comparison, the on-demand services are more expensive, but since we can turn them off when they're not in demand, we have to look at the full cycle of 24 hours or a week. The workday, the work week, month, holidays, et cetera, really affect our cost structure. Now, the other thing that obviously happens with these companies is that we will get requests from customers and requests from people engaged with customers to make changes to our product. And we can't treat those as a crisis. It's like a plant treating growth as a crisis. You know, we have to create software architectures that are adaptable and understand what our true capabilities are, build back-end services that can be reskinned and present the data in different ways. you know, hopefully we will gather data and make reuse that data multiple times in presenting it to customers, because that's where our expertise is. But if we think of ourselves as software engineers as just getting this one solution out and running, we're going to have to rebuild the solution for another customer that has a slightly different need set. I was actually thinking today about a customer that you worked with previously, because we're attempting to get a new insurance company and match our doctor to it. And not to go into the specifics of your engagement, but that's something you had to do as well, wasn't it?
Yes, where we trying to figure out what details to include here. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, basically, anyone who's engaged with the American Medical Insurance knows that you always try and make sure you get an insurance plan that has your favorite doctor in it. And actually matching doctor to insurance plan, it's hard enough for us as civilians. Imagine the insurance companies with doctors going in and out or changing, and the volume of that.
Yeah, the providers, which can mean either in the slang in that industry, belly buttons or doorknobs. Providers can be clinics or doctors, are constantly moving in and out of network for different insurance companies. And so in that field, you are constantly managing, keeping a up-to-date database of who is in and out of network for your insurance customers.
And so the challenge is not providing a database at time zero of doctors. That's challenging enough. But at time zero plus N, all the changes, all the different ways that the belly buttons have gone behind different doorknobs. And so your expertise is not in providing a database, but your expertise is managing the change of a database. And if what you built was a database that had very pretty links on how to find these doctors, and then someone moves to a different practice and it breaks everything, you didn't really know why you were building this application.
Yes, it's really all about keeping track of the deltas of the change is really the most important concern in the case of that particular product.
Yes, as we carefully skate around and move generalities to make sure that we don't get sideways with the legal departments. Legal departments are very dynamic.
Also a very dynamic industry.
That's right. So to revisit why we came into this conversation is software engineering is fun. Building these systems is fun. Pointing to a machine that's running and has your code running on it is fun, but you got to get paid for it. And creating the business around it is where you take that next step into maturity and not just, hey, I made billions of dollars off this crypto coin. I'm a genius and I will now take on social media and ignore all the problems that anyone has ever encountered with social media.
Yes, that I think the inability to learn from other people's mistakes is definitely a sign of immaturity.
Yep. And I think we look out across this landscape about these people who are pogo sticking in minefields. And we hope that we can bring those lessons that they've learned back into being a cloud advocate. So you can't just look at the cloud as a cheaper replacement for your data center. You have to pencil out why you're doing this, why the business needs to engage in it. And it always comes down to a business decision. And as we've said so many times, a business decision has one of two outcomes, decreasing cost or increasing revenue. And the final thing I'd like to introduce to the discussion, and we'll have a link to this, a simple explanation of this, is the concept of Kaizen. The idea that it's a Japanese term, which basically means continuous improvement. It doesn't have to be driven by the top down. It isn't necessarily a savior on a white horse coming in to change our cost structure. It's individual engineers, it's individual groups saying, this is a better way to do things and proving it. And the way you prove it in a business context is, this is going to increase revenue or this is going to decrease cost. So if you're listening to this cast and you're wondering what maturity means in this, it means looking around your own area and saying, engaging with this business, engaging in my role in this business are the ways that I can make it better. I can improve it, decrease cost, increase revenue. And we will give some links in the show notes about that as well. Our previous cost management session, we talked about, hey, things are unstable. We were talking about layoffs at Meta, right? And other yep. groups.
And that's continued, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, and we didn't even mention the 11,000 people that were let go at Meta. It was 11,000 or 11% of the workforce. Lots, and my LinkedIn is just blowing up with people looking for jobs. But you also have some very tightly focused folks. SATA Group in the GCP space had a big layoff. So in all of these areas, you have companies looking to decrease costs based on spending too much money. But if you are the solution, if you have solutions to decrease cost, that's going to be much more stabilizing for your career. So it's not as filled with glory as coming up with a new algorithm. It's as mundane as, hey, we're saving a buck an hour on this particular machine. But across thousands of machines, that's several people's salary. So hopefully you'll be inspired to take the approach of looking around and seeing what can I improve here and leveraging, in our case, the cloud to do things better, cheaper, and not just, hey, it works and walk away.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else you've seen around the industry?
No, I think that covered a good amount there.
The all-encompassing, holy gosh, what's happening in crypto? And oh my gosh, I wonder if Twitter will last the month, if
right.
not the week. It is amazing sometimes that our little playground has such ramifications in the world. Just that $20 billion market hit from a single tweet. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, thank you all for listening today. We'll be back next week with another conversation with Marcia. We'll be talking about how to get into the security area or IT security and cloud security specifically. By the by, Marcia was up on LinkedIn and is actively hiring folks on ScaleSec. So those of you, she's probably going to be scooping up a lot of folks from Meta and such, but that is still a huge growth area. And again, as we become more mature as an industry, it will only get bigger. So that's it for me. Anything I already asked you? So I think things are good.
Yep.
Okay. See you back here on the 17th then.
Yep. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Cloud Out Loud podcast. Please let us know in comments if you caught either of the gents calling a product or technology by the wrong name. Other information and suggestions are welcome too. Or feel free to tweet us at Cloud Out Loud Pod, or email us at cloudoutloud@ndhsw.com. We hope to see you again next week for another episode of Cloud Out Loud.